tonight's thought. I don't know why I was so rude to those Mormons the other day. Like, it was their parking lot, it was their turf. And they were just being nice to me, even though I had no right to be there and I was an invader. I was just awful to them, and they just were returning my sour attitude with kindness, like Mormons do. And it was just really irritating me even further. And I'm really trying to figure out, like, I don't, it's been weighing on me ever since. Why was I so rude to them? Why was I so mean? It's getting to me. Yeah, what would you do? Right, you're sitting there in a parking lot that's pretty much empty. There's like a couple of cars spread out, but it's the middle of the day, middle of the afternoon on a Sunday. And you're just sitting in your car like you're want to do, very often do, as a gig worker driving around all day. And you know, you sit in a lot of parking lots in the suburbs and the surrounding environs of the, you know, greater metro area. And as is usually happens, that you're not surprised by this, somebody pulls up to your car. They pull up to the passenger side, you're behind the wheel. And they look at you and they just want to know if you're okay. Because here in the South, the rumors are true that people are very kind and helpful. And they look out for each other. Usually those interactions, if you actually really do need help, end up in them being like, man, I'm sorry I could help you. But, you know, whatever. You're just used to it. And it's happened to me a million times. While I've been out driving, I'll be between orders and I'll just pull into a parking lot or onto the, you know, yeah, usually into a parking lot, not really on the side of the road so much. It's kind of dangerous, but I'll pull in there and somebody will usually, like, almost inevitably pull up right next to me and just to check on me, see if I'm okay. And I usually just give them the universal symbol without having to roll down my window or anything. I usually just point to my phone and just like beep boop beep boop, you know, I'm texting, right? That's usually it, because it's dangerous to text and drive, and you just want them to let them know that you're okay and you're just answering some text messages and some emails, right? So that's what you're doing in the church parking lot on Sunday afternoon there, and looking down at your phone, and then suddenly, like 100 times before, car pulls up right next to you on the passenger side, and you look up and you point to the text message on your phone, and but they're still telling you to roll the window down. And it's this guy who's like, you know that he goes to this church because he just looks like he goes to the church. Not to profile, but I, you know, you've been here in the South all your life and you just know the look. Right? The coiffed hair, over-gelled, the sweater vest, the clean-shaven face, the Pepsodent smile, perfect dental work, right? You just know, like, big old smile, showing it off, okay? You just know this is a person who goes to this church, and he's telling you to roll the window down by doing that hand crank motion, you know, clockwise, even though cars haven't had that mechanism since probably the 90s, I think, I'm guessing. But you can't really do the finger on the button, like, push it down, right? That's not the universal sign for rolling a window down. It's still the hand crank motion. But anyway, I digress, as I'm wont to do sometimes. But so even after I tell him I'm texting with my, you know, sign language, he's still telling me to roll it down. So I'm like, oh my God. Okay. So I know what's happening right now. Okay. I know what's happening. I'm wise to this because, again, here in the South, it happens a lot. Not as much as just people checking on you, but this happens a lot. So I have to turn on my car to get the power and then push the button, roll down the passenger side window. And before he can say anything, I'm just like, it's okay, man. Thank you. I'm on the phone right now. I didn't want to text and drive. And he's like, oh yeah, man, that's cool. That's cool. I just want to let you know I go to church here. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's nice. I'll be out of here in just a minute. I'm sorry for using up the space. He's like, no, man, you're good. Use it all you want. You know, it's yours. I just want to let you know, we're about to go to church if you want to come in with us. And, you know, so I know that this is an interaction that happens quite a lot down here, is that, like, you know, just people want you to come into church, especially the evangelical types, the Christian types, the people whose, like, entire job it is. These are the people I grew up with. Their entire job is to save lost souls, right? So I tell them, no, man, that's okay, because I've actually got an appointment in just a few minutes, which was true. I actually was not out delivering food like I normally am on a Sunday afternoon. I have I've been working with a student who lives about a mile away, and I was about 10 minutes early, so I was just killing time, so I didn't want to show up early or anything. So but yeah, I said, I've got an appointment in a few minutes. Oh man, that's okay, we're going pretty late. It's like, okay, so like on a Sunday night, you're going pretty late. So I assume maybe like 7 or 8 o'clock was what he was thinking. But I said, no, man, I think I'm going to be going pretty late too. I appreciate it. And I start to roll up the window. And this is when I knew he was not like a normal kind of Jesus freak. He was something else, because the tribe I grew up with, right, the Baptist, would usually stop at that point and just let the person, the witnessed, roll up the window. And so I started to roll up the window, and it was about 3/4 of the way up, and then he told me to roll it down again. He did the hand cranking motion again. I said, like, what? Yeah, can I help you? I said. And he said, I just want to let you know I go to church here every Sunday. And I said, okay, yeah, that's great. And he's like, not just this Sunday, but next Sunday too. You know that, right? I was like, yeah, I do. I do know that. And I'm starting to get exasperated at this point. And I don't know what you would do either. If you would just continue to be nice, or if you would begin to get defensive. Right? Like I was starting to be. And finally he said, like, yeah, so I'm here this Sunday, I'm here next Sunday, I'm here the Sunday after that. So any of those Sundays, you just can come and I'll welcome you in, man. You know, come on in. And this is at the point where I just said, like, I appreciate it, man, but you know what? I've been here in the South my entire life. I know what day church is on. Thank you. And then I just rolled up the window as he's kind of looking at me. And I look back at my phone and just continue to pretend to text message. Right. And then I just slowly, you know, his car, I hear it pull away, and see him roll up his window, and he's driving off into the sunset. Right. And probably praying for the lost soul that he just encountered, I suppose. And yeah, like, what would you do? Because I just, you know, I tell you, I don't like that. I get very defensive about that kind of thing. Just this false sincerity, this salesman kind of tactic, you know, these. And it's something that I grew up with, and it's something that I very much wanted to escape as soon as I was able to. And I was thankful to have parents that allowed me to, when I made the decision to stop going to church and stop being, like, kind of, I don't know, groomed as, like, kind of a multi-level marketing, you know, manager for Christ, it just was, it was important for me to kind of get out of that sort of thing. And I guess I was just getting defensive because here it is. This is like just in the South. If people are nice to you to that degree, it usually means that they want you to, they want something for, or they get some kind of, I don't know, posthumous commission out of it or whatever, I think is, I guess, a good way to say it, right? But yeah, it was interesting though, because I knew that they were not like normal Jesus psychos, right? They were more than that. And it's interesting because this church I've been passing it my entire life. As I grew up, I live, ever since I'm 10 years old, about 5 miles away from this church, and I pass it frequently. Going from my parents' house to where I live now. And I never noticed it before. It's a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So, you know, these are the Mormons, and these guys, I tell you, they are, they're psycho for Jesus. Like they will die. They are the true spiritual warriors. It's really like, that movie, you know, that movie, I only saw it once when it came out, that movie 300. I do remember this one scene, you know, that movie 300, where you got these big beefed up, you know, oily Spartans going to do battle. And, they're coming up on a mountain, and there's like this one other tribe of people who are also going into battle, and they're much scrawnier, and their equipment sucks, and they just look like they're so out of place and scared. And the king there is asking all of them what they do, and like one of them's like, "I'm a carpenter, sir." And you know, like the other's like, "I don't know, I help the carpenters." I don't know what they do. But yeah, the king's like, "Well, I'll tell you what I do. I'm a warrior, and he's a warrior, and he's a warrior, and all the Spartans are warriors." So, right, these are the Mormons. The Mormons are the true spiritual warriors. They will stop at nothing. And while all of us are just the scrawny little weaklings from the neighboring villages who really depend on, I guess, the Mormons to do the heavy lifting of converting people to, I don't know, like, I guess some version of God, right? Like, so, right, so, it's, this thing that, I've always, grown up knowing, and I think, like, the Mormons, even though, like, normal people who want to convert you to Christ, they are very much, like, bred into this, almost like a salesman-like program, because they do look at everybody, like the people I grew up going to church with, going to youth group every Wednesday, and then going there every Sunday, and then going to massive service and all that. They would train you, right, to go out and sort of assume that everybody that you see is potentially a lost soul that you need to witness to. You need to bring the story and the message of Jesus Christ and how he died for our sins. And you just assume that are brought up to assume that the rest of the world is wicked and only you can save them. So I did not really like that idea, because I wanted to do other things than, and think about people in other ways than that. So, but this is, this was the message, right? But the Mormons really take it to a bit of an extreme. You know, when they are, I think my little sister actually dated a Mormon for a brief time. I think they had to break up because he had to go on a mission, because like Mormons, I think like young Mormon men, especially, I think when they're something like 18 or 19 years old, they have to go on some kind of a 2-year compulsory mission to basically just walk up and down the streets all day long. And witness to people. And the last time I did encounter these people was, you know, like a few years ago. And I think I was just as rude to them, I think, because they don't just leave you alone. They really do kill you with kindness. And they would be really good at selling timeshares, I think, or just... They are like the salesmen, the salespeople from like, you know, Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, if they didn't curse and they didn't drink coffee, I think. Yeah, I've got like a picture of them here. And yeah, they just dress like, you know, young Republicans and carry around a Book of Mormon and things like that. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I was standing out here outside the Midnight Citizen studio. And by the way, this is the Midnight Citizen studio. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Mike Booty. Yeah, speaking of psycho for a cause, right? And yeah, my apartment butts up against an alley here, and it's in a, you know, it's in a south side. It's in like an urban area, what I think people from the safe suburbs would probably call a bad area, but I think it's pretty safe generally. And standing out there in the alley, smoking a cigar one day and listening to some music, I'm there and I'm usually pretty safe. I feel comfortable there. This alley is used as like a thoroughfare for, you know, moms walking strollers, people walking dogs, joggers, and derelicts alike. I mean, everybody uses it. And I've never felt particularly unsafe. I've never seen somebody coming and packed up everything and just immediately run back inside before they pass me in the alley, except for this time when I saw these two like young Republican guys walking toward me in their blue suits and their ties and their cut short hair, and just not a single, I don't even think if they could grow facial hair they would be able to. See, I'm being mean just talking about it, but I mean, this was irritating and definitely informed my defensiveness toward this guy the other day in the parking lot. And I was listening to music and just immediately saw these Mormons walking toward me. I'm like, man, I need to go back in because I know exactly what's going to happen now. They're going to want to engage me. And I would much rather just like encounter like a homeless guy who just like asked me for a couple of bucks or something and gave me like a big story about, you know, his girlfriend being in the hospital or something, and he needed bus fare to get there and all that. So I started to pack up and kind of go back inside, but then I was like, no, this is my house, whatever. I'm going to stand my ground and whatever. Okay, so I stayed, but I looked down toward the ground. I did not make eye contact with these guys, and it was toward the end of the day, and it was a sunny day, so I just saw these two shadows sort of creeping past me. And I was like, walk on, walk on, walk on. Okay. This approaching storm. And then they stopped, and just their shadows were like just engulfing me. And I looked up and I just saw them not making the universal motion to roll my window down, because I was not indeed in a car. But they did bring their hands up to their ears collectively, and they were telling me to take my headphones off. And I was like, I did the same thing that I did the other day. I pointed toward my phone and I was like listening to something, and they're like, yeah, I know. And they would just do that motion like, yeah, I know, and continue to like take the headphones off. And so finally I did. I was like, yeah, what's up? And they're like, what are you doing, man? Like, and I said, I'm listening to music. It's like, that's cool. What are you listening to? And I was like, I'm listening to, actually, I think I was listening to a podcast. I was trying to explain the podcast to them. I don't know what I was listening to. It was probably something like Phil Hendry or Gene Shepherd or something that would have, like My Religion, I suppose, taken a very long time to explain to them. You know, and I think maybe I could have kept going with that and actually sort of witnessed to them or something. I don't know. That would have been interesting, right? So, but yeah, then they started to tell me, like, where do you go to church? Where do you, you know, I'll tell you where we go to church. And I said, like, guys, listen. And I told them the same thing that I told the people, is like, I grew up here. I know everything about what you're doing. And thank you very much for that. But, right, I have no intent to subscribe to your newsletter at this time. Because, you know, see, the thing that just gets me about it, right, is the fact that I do know the game. And It's a game that I was very well informed of from the age of about, you know, 4 years old to maybe 16 or 17 years old. And I just decided to get out of it one day because I was never really invested in it anyway. And it seemed like a horrible way to build relationships with people, which is around this concept of like, you know, this thing that you can talk about and interpret, which is the Bible and God and Jesus and the whole big thing. And it's fascinating, but when you do talk about it, like with people, and you seek to build relationships with them, it just is like an insincere thing. You might as well be trying to sell them like a mattress or like a magazine subscriptions or something. And it's something that I really did not want any part of. And so I get defensive when people try to do that with me, because it's like, you know, you can't sell to a former seller. I'm sorry. It's just doesn't work that way. I'm onto your game. I know all your tricks. I know exactly what you're up to. Yeah. 'Cause that's what it is in the South. The South is just full of people who grow up understanding the same message and doing it and thinking that everybody is lost around them, but really what it is just like everybody has the same message and they have to go out and kind of get some kind of, like I said, posthumous commission on lost souls and convert people. And it just feels like a bunch of, you know, like when you're in elementary school and you've got that big like fundraiser sale and you have to go out and sell chocolates, and everybody after school is just going up and down the neighborhood to each other's houses, selling each other the same thing, just to, I guess, make each other feel better about their sales tactics or something. You know, that's what it feels like. It's like you would go to church every Wednesday night and every Sunday morning and be given some new strategies. And then you would, you would go out and try them. And the usual inevitable response you would get was like, oh man, thank you so much. I go to this other church, but I appreciate what you're doing so much. You're going to save so many people. You're just so talented, such a talented warrior for Christ. Right. And that's what it would go like. And I think I could have like applied myself in other ways. They did have donuts, like Dunkin' Donuts, every Sunday, Krispy Kreme. Actually, I don't think Dunkin' Donuts was here yet, but they had Krispy Kreme, Papa John's Pizza, good incentives for going there, good incentives for going to the sales meetings. Yeah, and I got out of it really as soon as I could, about 16 or 17 years old. When I actually had a car and parents started letting me drive myself to church. And just one day I decided not to get up and drive myself to church, and they never really questioned me on it. I think they weren't going to push me to that, which was very good. They weren't like a lot of the other people at the church, like the parents of my friends, who were really big disciplinarians about it and really weird about it. Yeah, there were a lot of reasons why I got out of this whole thing. I think like one of the reasons was, you know, I was a teenager, and being a kid, it's sort of easy to, I guess, buy into all that. I mean, yes, your brain is very young and you still believe in Santa Claus and you believe in magic and you do believe that, right, Jesus did all these things, like, and you know, you don't really think of them as like parables. You don't really even know what the word parable is. But the other thing also is that you get Jesus as a baby. You kind of have this idea that Jesus was born in a manger. So, you know, you're close to being a baby also. So you have this like identification, this relationship with Jesus Christ, because because he's more or less your age, right? And yeah, then when you become a teenager, you sort of lose that track. You're sort of like, wait a second. You know, they cut out part two of the trilogy. It was like going to the thrift store and like the Two Towers was missing out of that Lord of the Rings box set or something. Like, what happened to Jesus between being a baby and being an adult, going around and doing all that, walking on water and things like that? What was he like as a teenager? I needed my Dawson's Creek Jesus. I needed Jesus going through puberty. And the church couldn't give me any of that. All they could really give me was like adult Jesus sort of being cool. You know, this was like in the early 90s and the mid 90s. And as I said, this was a terrible time really to grow up in America, because marketing, especially like in religion, marketing had really taken hold of religion. And they did realize that record numbers of teenagers were dropping out of going to church and not really interested in perpetuating the story. And so they had to scramble and come up with a way to make Jesus relevant to kids. So really, one of the ways they did that is very much like, you know, the ways that they created popular sitcom characters. You know, they made him cool. It was the same way that, you know, Warner Brothers sort of rebranded Bugs Bunny and Disney rebranded Mickey Mouse. Sunglasses, I don't know. And, you know, they made, Jesus, cool. And, we started getting all these t-shirts with like these sayings on it from the Bible that would be printed in like this funky font. And, you know, all of that was okay. All of that was good, but I was still sort of like, you know, where is Jesus getting rejected by girls? Where is Jesus trying to figure out what he wants to be when he grows up? Because I'm not really buying this whole thing. Like, I want to, you know, I'm the son of God and that's what I'm going to do when I grow up and all that. And I will tell you that now I do think of the idea that like Jesus was 30 before he figured out what he wanted to do for a career. Right. So I was 30 as well before I decided I wanted to go and be a teacher and do what I do now. So that's one thing that we did have in common. You know, Jesus didn't have any student debt, but I did. So, you know, whatever. But I did not, I just did not relate to Jesus when I was a teenager. So one of the reasons I dropped out, right? The other reason I think also was because of the protocol. The protocol was a big part of it. The idea that the Baptist, especially, okay, so like I gotta look up a little bit about the Baptist to sort of tell you who they are, because it's a weird denomination of like you know, the evangelical faith that, you know, believed that Jesus Christ was the you know, the Son of God, that he was crucified on the cross for our sins and yeah, all that. So like the Baptist, I believe I was actually Southern Baptist. I'm not really sure what the difference is, quite honestly. You know, Baptist, it says here, are a major branch of evangelical Protestantism. Okay. So they're distinguished by baptizing only professing Christian believers and doing so by complete immersion. So yeah, when I was 12 years old, I had to go through a whole program. This is not unlike a Catholic communion or, where you accept Jesus into your heart and you agree to be born again, because we're born into sin. So symbolically, what they do is they take you and they dunk you into this big dunking tank. That secretly, I think a lot of the kids really wanted to do that just because they do it in front of like the entire church, usually on Wednesday nights, sometimes on Sunday mornings. And so they get attention, which kids love. And, also it's just kind of fun to be dunked under the tank and all that. And all my friends did something kind of silly and weren't taking it very seriously. And I think, you know, I'm not trying to be so cynical. This is just all anecdotal information, but I think like most of the kids that I grew up with did not take it fully seriously because we were 12 years old. Right. And we were being dunked in water. It was like the dunking tank on the last day of school at the fair or something like that to raise money, for for the library or something. But yeah, but those are Baptist, and so that's those are the people who I grew up with and going to church as. And Southern Baptists are somewhat different, and I'm not really sure how. I guess they're just in the South, but it says here, yeah, they're the largest denomination in Alabama. In 2021, nearly 800,000 of Alabama's 4.9 million people belong to churches affiliated with it. And yeah, this is on the Pew Research Center here, seven facts about Southern Baptist, that Southern Baptists are the largest evangelical Protestant group in the United States. There's a Southern Baptist Convention. The Southern Baptist is not a centralized church like the Roman Catholic Church, but a fellowship of congregations. And I think that is perhaps a key fact about it, is the fact that it's the difference between, I suppose, like the Italian Mafia and the Dixie Mafia. Like the Italian Mafia, how they're very centralized, and there's... right, like a Don, and there's a Capo regime and all that. Southern Baptists are like the Dixie Mafia in the fact that they are just kind of loosely affiliated groups that get together occasionally at like conventions and things like that. But Southern Baptists it says here, they tend to express higher levels of religious commitment than Americans overall, though they're generally in line with other evangelicals. So, Southern Baptists say religion is very important in their lives and they pray at least daily, 81% for both. Again, another key thing about why I sort of left the whole deal is because there was just like really no protocol for what was going on for how to more or less like atone for your sins. And so, you know, like the Catholics have a protocol. The Catholics tell you that if you sin, then you go to confession, that you have a confessor and you sit in there and you just dump it all out right then and there. And then you do a few things like say some Hail Marys and then you're absolved from it. Right. Southern Baptists, like when I was very young, just, I had a pastor say to me that I can speak to God whenever I want, that, I don't need to go to a confession, and you don't need somebody like a middleman between you and God. It's just you and God. You have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And this right here really concerned me a lot, because it's like, you mean I can just talk to God whenever I want? And like, absolutely. You know, like when you're on the playground, when you're in class, you know, you can talk to God anywhere. And so like, I talked to my mom about this. I said, like, when do you talk to God? She's like, I talk to God every time, all the time. I talk to him when I'm in the store buying groceries. I talk to him when I'm, in traffic, sitting at a red light. And, this really messed with me, because now I'm sort of thinking, and of course you're taught to know, and I think all religions are like, God is an omnipresent force. God is everywhere and God is omniscient, all knowing. But the idea that like you could just talk to him and you don't need a certain time and a place really messed with my head very early on. The way that I sort of think about it is like, this is years before the iPhone came out, that I'm now like, so I have like a smartphone for speaking with God, right? It's like, God can reach me and I can reach God whenever I want to. There's no off time. There's no off hours. And so it did. It messed kind of with my mind, right? So now I'm sort of there and I'm praying in the morning and I'm praying at night, but I'm also praying on the playground and I'm praying in class and I'm praying on the school bus and I'm in the middle of a conversation praying and I'm praying. And the reason I'm praying so much is because I feel like I am sinning so much. That's the other thing. It's like the Southern Baptists are not really clear about what sin is. I mean, of course, they have the Ten Commandments. That's a good guidepost. But around when I was growing up in the 90s, more and more things sort of became sins. Like, it was a sin to watch The Simpsons, and it was a sin to watch Beavis and Butthead. And then later on, it was a sin to watch South Park when I was 15 years old and really kind of over this whole thing, right? And then it was a sin to watch the Ellen DeGeneres show. And then suddenly it was a sin to go to Disney World because the Disney World celebrated gay people and had Gay Pride Day. And it just seemed like every week I was going in, the rules were kind of changing as to what a sin was. And like the and so it did get you to the point where like everything that you did, you felt like was a sin. And so, and then you had to talk to God about it and immediately apologize, right? Like the way you would get like a bad grade on a test and just like fear all day long, having to go home and explain it to your parents. That was like what it was like with God all day long. And, it's sort of just got to this point where it became, not so much that I was praying to actually really absolve myself of sin and it like expunge myself, right, of all of it. It was just more of like an obsessive compulsive disorder, really is what it was. And I know that like OCD has been talked about a lot in conjunction with religion as being something that is, OCD is something that does spin off of being heavily absorbed in religion from a very young age, because especially with like Catholicism, because like my wife was raised Catholic and I have been to mass with her a few times. She doesn't really practice anymore than I do, but we have been to like midnight mass, like on Christmas Eve. We'll go there just because I think of it. It's like one of the most beautiful shows you'll ever see in your life. It's like great entertainment. It is. And it is beautiful. And it's like a tradition and it's great. But the liturgy that you go through, like the kneeling and the standing and I guess they call it the Lord's the mass, right? The actual mass, right? They call it the Lord's Supper, I suppose. In the evangelical and Protestant faith, right? But it does inspire this certain level of like tactile response to like, you know, emotional turmoil. Does that make any sense? Like just this physiological unease to match what's going on inside your mind and like how guilty you feel about something. But yeah, like with Catholicism, it's not really so much, it's just you actually have a certain place and a time that has to be done, and then you can go out and sin some more and then come back the next day. It's sort of like, you know, renting a movie from Blockbuster or whatever, right, at the time. But yeah, Southern Baptist, just like we get streaming, right? Like we stream sin. Okay, we take it in and we just immediately pray, and then there it is, right? And so just praying all the time. So I was eventually praying, not really as a matter of actually feeling bad about what I had done. Okay. Because by the time I'm like a teenager, I'm kind of wising up to the whole thing and just sort of feeling like it's the same thing as like Christmas or something, where it's like, if you're not good, Santa's not going to bring you gifts. It starts to feel like that same exact way, only like this one they're actually taking serious. So I start sinning more and more, I guess you could say, and like going to school and cursing and maybe not doing like making the best choices and all that, but also just being like a normal kid. I was like, just whatever. I was testing the limits of what I could get away with and all that, just like any kid does, I suppose. But I was still praying though, like all the time, like there in gym class, praying, playing basketball, praying there in, you know, study hall, reading a novel, praying, because every time I would see a curse word, I would say it in my head from that novel. And I would read Catcher in the Rye and there's, you know, the F word. And I would pray, oh God, I'm so sorry for saying that word. And then I would say it again. I would have to do it. So it really interrupt things and just become like this obsessive compulsive disorder that I would just carry over with me. Right. So it just would be just nonstop. And I think that's one of those things where it's like I just completely had to give it up eventually. And I did continue praying well into my 20s. And I do remember the moment that I actually just told myself I need to stop this. And it was not unlike a few weeks ago when I told myself I need to just stop smoking so many cigars and drinking so much alcohol. Even though I don't think I indulge that much as other people I know, or maybe not I know, but other people maybe. But I was having a lot of cigars. Maybe not so much alcohol, but I did just make this one moment. I just like this one decision. I'm just going to stop praying. I was standing on top of, I was working at the zip line at the time, on a zip line. And I was standing on top of a treehouse, and I was just there, and I was sort of being like, I need to pray right now because I feel really guilty about something I did, even though I really didn't. Is this making sense? I would just need to say a prayer. And all of a sudden, I just said, like, why am I doing this? Because if I say a prayer, that means that this person is going to come across the zip line safely, and I'm going to catch them, and everything's going to be okay. And if I don't pray that God is not going to let them come across safely, and their line is going to snap, and they're going to fall to the ground, right? And I just said, that's silly. Like, I've known that that's silly for a very long time. So why do I need to pray right now? Like, because it's really going to make me physically uncomfortable. Well, just maybe fight that urge. Don't be physically uncomfortable. So there I am. I'm 31 years old, and I'm standing on top of a tree as I am telling this person to zip line across from me, and I'm about to say a prayer. Like, please, God, I'm sorry for everything I've done today. No matter what my sins are, I'm sure they were bad. Just let this person get across okay, and don't kill them. And I said I could say that prayer, but I'm not going to. And so I didn't. And so I told the person to zip line across to me, and they did. And they made it. I caught them. Nothing happened. They didn't die. I wondered if the person would have been okay with it if I had given up prayer at that very moment that they were 60 feet up in the air, you know, ziplining across from me. I'm not sure if they would have been or not. But in any case, you know, that's the day I gave up prayer, and I stopped being OCD and weird about it, right? And there it is. But, you know, you still see the signs everywhere, even though, like, I haven't said a prayer in now 12 years. See, it's not an odd number. So it's like, you know, but that's how you know that, like, I've given it up, because usually it's an odd number if you really are counting. But like it's something like 12 years now. I don't think I've said a prayer. But I nevertheless still do get this anxious feeling like I should say a prayer, right? Like if my wife is about to go on a long road trip, or somebody I know is about to be on a plane, or if I'm on a plane. And I really do get this like burning urge inside me to do something, to do, like, you know, pick this coffee cup up and drink from it five times. That replaces where I would have said a prayer before, right? It still happens to this very day, and you're still also looking for signs of God, right? Because I even though I gave up going to church, I can't say that I have ever been fully confident in my decision to actually give up God. I do consider myself to this day, I suppose, an atheist, because but I think it's really just an atheist for like the God that I was brought up to believe in, you know, this angry, wrathful God who also is kind of cool at the same time. It's almost like, you know, the Baptists sort of treated God like Andy Griffith or something, right? You know, like in the early episodes of Andy Griffith, you know, he's like kind of the like a stern old, you know, Old Testament God. And then when you get to the later episodes and like the colorized Andy Griffith episodes, he's like the New Testament God, you know, like all much, much cooler, much more laid back, I suppose, than he is in the Old Testament. And, you know, I just decided to give it up. But I still nevertheless, feel like, that compulsion to actually believe in him or believe in some kind of a God. Right. So I guess you could say I'm atheist about the God I grew up to believe, but I am agnostic, I suppose, that I do think that there is some kind of, like, I don't know, ruling, governing, body over their over this universe. I don't know. I think there has to be of some kind. Maybe not. I don't know. You know, and I have, of course, looked into Gnosticism a little bit, and this whole idea of archons and the fact that, like, there is some kind of governing presence, but, you know, it's really just sort of more like metaphysical. It's kind of manifested in all of us. And we create a collective evil just as much as we, like, create a collective good. You know, but I don't know. Even knowing all of that, I still am looking for signs and just weird things, and also having like this background in English literature and being very heavily attuned to interpretation of art and symbols and signs and everything, just always looking. And I think today was a good example because, well, today was the end of a very long epic battle with the birds and the pigeons and whatever else flies around the skies of Birmingham, Alabama. Last weekend I was pretty much in my apartment. I was in this office, actually, the Midnight Citizen Studio, all weekend long, and I was grading papers, but I was also, you know, doing the podcast. I was editing the vlog, and didn't really get out much last weekend. So the birds and the pigeons and whatever else is up there just destroyed my car. Like they did a couple weekends ago when I had a similar kind of lost weekend inside the Midnight Citizen studio. They just destroyed my car. And so it was just covered, like that scene from like High Anxiety that's a parody of The Birds, you know, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, right? And I went on Monday and I got my car washed, and I just paid for like the basic wash because they turned my pewter gray car into a completely white car with some little black splotches there and here and there. So I went through the car wash, and it took care of most of it, like the $11 basic wash, but not all of it. But I was okay with it still, right? Because I just did not want to drive to school the next day and see my colleagues and like some of my students, perhaps, just see the car I was in, because it was noticeable. And it was like really to the point where, you know, just like the Mormons, you know, just walking around, people see you in your car and they actually will say, like, the birds love you, right? They'll make some kind of a crack about it. Even though everybody has some of that on their car, I had a lot of it. So I got it washed off. And then the next day, which was a Tuesday, we had a big rainstorm come through Birmingham, and it took care of the rest of it. And I was kicking myself because I really should have just waited for the rainstorm. See, that's what I do. It's like I get economical car washes. I can live with like a little bit of a dirty car because they are kind of expensive. And I guess I could go hand wash it, but it's easier to go through the car wash, you know, cause it takes less time, and a machine does it for you. So, but I could have waited until the next day and just like, I don't know, but I didn't. So anyway, so Tuesday comes, they get it all. And then a couple of days go by, and just again, like just the birds come right through, just like in a beeline, and just like bomb my car. It's almost like it's, I know like the, you know, the pigeons usually go for the statues, and my theory is that like my car is gray. So maybe they confuse it for like marble or, you know, limestone or something like that, you know, something that statues are normally made out of. Maybe that's what's going on. But, you know, but I also think that like maybe the birds are like incredibly anti-racist or something. And so like, you know, they're attacking it. Not like it's my car is a, you know, like any kind of statue, but like a Confederate monument or something like that. I don't know. Maybe that's what's going on. But anyway, but nevertheless, they hit it and they didn't hit any other cars. And so today it was like worse than it was on last Monday morning. So I took it to the car wash again, and I get it through, and this time I pay for like a more advanced wash to try and get the job done that the basic car wash and the rainstorm had done together over 2 days. So I just pay for the more advanced wash with the shampoo and the conditioner, and I take it through, and the difference is negligible from the car wash that I got on Monday. I'm looking at my car there, and it's still, you know, it got a lot of it, but there's still like some little white and black splotches on it. You know, some of the bird stuff, right? And I'm looking at this, and I'm sort of like, you know, if I were an interpreting man, and if I still had a little bit of God in me, or I believed that God sends messages, right? The way that you are brought up to believe that God sends messages to you, telling you to do things, right? I would look at this and I would look at it as some kind of a sign, right? Just like the car is the body and the bird shit is the sin. Forgive me, God. I'm sorry I cursed. Excuse me. It's like he knows who he does. He really care. Like it's like shit. It's just a word. It's just a word we've come up with to represent a feeling that we all have, right? But I guess, you know, as a whole person, you're not really supposed to have those negative feelings. You're supposed to feel positive and good all the time, right? But anyway, so I look at this and I'm sort of like, okay, I think God is maybe telling me right now, if I believe in him, that you know, I usually try and go through a car wash. I try and be a good person. I'm good to people. I'm nice to people. I do good things. I treat people with kindness. Right. I don't litter. And, I cut up little plastic rings on, you know, packs of ginger ale so that they don't choke the fishes and things like that. But you still have a little bit of sin in you, right? And you got to keep going back through that car wash and back through that car wash. And even when a rainstorm comes away, comes and just like washes it all away. Right. So it's like, that's one of the things that, like, you know, growing up with God teaches you to do is just to think of everything in terms of parables, and everything is connected. And there's always a meta narrative to something that, you know, this world is a struggle between the saved and the lost. Right. And yeah, here I am. I'm 42 years old. It's been, you know, 24 years since I last sat in church, and it's still with me to this very day. It's still with me. It's just one of those things that I don't believe is ever going to leave, right? Which is, I believe, why I get really, really defensive when somebody tells me that church is every Sunday. I think that's what it is. Well, that's where I'm going to end it tonight. I meant to do more stuff. I've got a bunch of notes here. That was my opening. That always happens. It's like, I always want to just do so much more show. But I'll save these notes for next week. They're all boring anyway. I don't know. I hope you enjoyed the show. This has been the Midnight Citizen Show. I have been your host, Mike Booty. Thank you so much. I want to remind you, you can find me over at mikesbonfire.substack.com. That's where I've been hosting the show now for about a year and a half or so. And it's been great. Last couple weeks especially, I've met a lot of great people on there. And if you're a new listener to the show, I want to remind you that you can find my complete archive over at archive.org. Just look for the Internet Archive. Just look for the Midnight Citizen Show. You can type that into the search bar. And I'm going to be posting all those shows soon, like that entire archive and back catalog and everything. But I've also been posting shows over at the Overnightscape Underground, that great website founded by Frank Edward Nora of the Overnightscape podcast. He's been doing that show since 2003. And I'm over there at onsug.com. Yeah, I'm over there with like a lot of other great podcasters who do shows just like this one, like monologue shows and all that. People like Frank, as I said, and Bob, who's been doing his show with Miles Tidell since 1999. Static Radio. And yeah, Chad Bowers, who's also here in Birmingham. He was in Texas for a while, but we met through the Overnightscape Underground. And recently we got together for pizza at Davenport's over there in Vestavia. And actually recorded a show, and I think we're going to do another one perhaps maybe this coming week. like a Birmingham Pizza podcast. I don't know, but you can find that over on SUG and also post a link to it in the show notes. And I think Chad's on Substack as well at William Chad Bowers. So you can check him out over there. I'll post a link to that. But yeah, it's just been great lately. Sitting in parking lots, talking to Mormons. And I do need to find a job, like a permanent job teaching. I know that needs to happen pretty soon. But in any case, for now, like what is sustainable right now is like me teaching during the week, working on weekends, doing the show. I also am publishing vlogs, also at the Substack, but also over at YouTube. At youtube.com/the_MidnightCitizenPodcast. And I'm over there, yeah, as well, so you can find me. And realizing that I brought some whiskey with me to toast to Gene Hackman. I wanted to talk about Gene Hackman. He's in my show notes, but I didn't get to him. I was talking too much about prayer. Yeah, I don't know, man. If Gene Hackman is up there right now, I do want to say thank you so much, Gene, and put in a good word for me, really. I really, really hope I'm not pissing off whatever version of God exists right now. I really hope it's not the version that I learned about. I really don't. This guy who's telling us all to turn every interaction we have into a sale, you know, always be closing. But did Gene Hackman ever do Glengarry Glen Ross? I don't know. But anyway, but yeah, I do want to say toast to Gene Hackman, one of my favorite actors, right, of all time, honestly. So yeah, here's to you, sir. And we'll see you next time, all of you. You. Keep your eyes open.